You are listening to the podcast of the M2 Women Journey to Excellence series with Lexus, the all-new UX. Thanks to Victor, JJ Gardner, Legacy Contracting and New Zealand Steel. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.
Rob, I'm interested to hear from you how we bring more men into this conversation, how we, present company excluded, how does a regular Kiwi male at the top of his game and as a CEO or the head, chair of the board view diversity? Is it just something a bit woo-woo?
Well, most are smart enough to pay lip service these days. And many, look, we actually have a group of chief executives and senior managers coming through in our businesses now who are different. We do have many men coming through into senior leadership positions in business that do genuinely believe in the virtues of diversity and of flexibility. They're battered about a bit, but at the most senior level, I think we've actually got a pretty progressive group of chief executives in New Zealand businesses at the moment. I think the two bigger problems are at the board level and at middle management level, where there are still many men who are scrapping to maintain privilege against change. And I think at that level, getting conversations going that are constructive is much more difficult, because these are men who are still living in the old world and maybe in the last 10 or 15 years of their working career and don't see any benefit to them from change, possibly because there isn't any. That is the most difficult part of the conversation, I think.
Do you think that will naturally change, though, as the years go by? Do you think the generation that's coming up behind is going to naturally improve the situation?
I hope so. I think the generation of young men and women that I see in business and indeed just coming out of our schools now is qualitatively far better than my generation and possibly even the generation after me. I think we're producing really fine young people, well-educated young people, and we are not providing the environments at work in which they can prosper. I think the issues businesses like to talk about, the school's not producing the right sort of people. I think businesses are not producing the right sort of jobs for the people that are being produced from our schools, who are, in fact, I think, exceptional, by and large. Obviously, some ratbags and some underachievers for all sorts of reasons. But as a generalisation, I do think it's improving. You know, my two adult sons are far better people than I ever was. Are part of absolutely a different world. But as I say, the hard conversations are at the board table and I think in middle management.
It's the arm extension generation. They walk around like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say to the kids, where's your arm extension? Because everything's phone. Everything's done by the phone.
But that's, I think, you know, part of this is whether it's diversity or not, the next generation want to work differently. You know, they don't potentially have that job for 10 years. In fact, they may have four jobs. You know, they're always on. They don't get it. You know, I found it recently, someone, you know, back in my day, you know, we kind of had a conversation. Well, you know, look at those kids that, you know, are getting all the pollution out of the waterways. Well, they did all of that on their devices sitting in a room together. You know, there is different ways to collaborate now. And I think, you know, technology has caught up. And I think actually businesses have got to get with the program. It is gone are the days of you're sitting at your desk 8 till 5 that you're being productive. This has got to be about outcomes. And I think, you know, we as leaders have got to embrace that, you know. And I still see in the enterprise world that the chief executive sits there and is everyone still here? was one of the biggest things that surprised me coming to Microsoft. I remember school holidays walking in and there were like two people in the office. I was like, where is everyone? Well, they are genuinely working from home. They are parents. We trust them. They are doing output and they've got the technology. And it truly, for me, we are a global organization when sometimes we've got to be on conference calls with the US at 9 o'clock actually means that you should go and drop your children off, which is what I do. Or you must go to that school event because none of us want to wake up one day and go, great career, but man, we just weren't there for our families. So all of us in business owe it to our people. The next generation are demanding it and technology is there to back it up. So, you know, it's real.
Okay, so that's the case for you and at Microsoft. So we've got women here that are probably wanting some take-homes from this today that are going to go into their probably older male European boss on Monday morning and say, hey, I was at this diversity conference on Friday and they've said that we should ask for flexibility. And they're like, you're what? You know, what do these guys say to those bosses?
Yeah, it's hard to convince. Well, I think this was first said about journalists, that it's hard to convince someone of something when their livelihood depends upon them not believing it, not thinking it. And, you know, that's a responsibility for senior business leadership, I think, to enable and to break free from some of those jobs. There's a lot of fine talk at board tables and on panels that's not necessarily reflected when you get to the branch management of a particular organisation. I'm very aware of it. And one of the things that we're not good at in New Zealand is having honest conversations anyway. We don't. I notice it at the board table that we're not actually very honest with one another about our qualities and our sometimes lack of qualities. We're not very honest when someone's, you know, past their use-by date. We're quite happy to do that for a manager we've never met or 50 workers that we've never seen. But we're not good at telling Frank across the table that it might be time to move on. And I think that's replicated in a lot of New Zealand workforces, that it's part of New Zealand, certainly Pākehā culture, that we're not able to be very honest with one another. I read a very good book last year, and I apologise, I can't remember the name of the woman that wrote it, someone else here may know, but it's called Radical Candor. And it's about being open and being strong without making people feel bad. And I think that's one of the most important skills that I talk to my managers about now, to develop that skill about being open and exchanging views without people needing to feel threatened. My generation doesn't have any capability to do that, apart from very few exceptions.
I guess empowering our younger generation to look for workplaces that offer these kind of things is the best way forward. What about programs, diversity programs, because it's very fashionable to have diversity programs in businesses now. But how do you go beyond just that diversity tick? So say you hire the person that ticks the box for you, but retention's really hard, promotion's really hard for that person because they're still facing daily biases. Anybody?
Well, mostly for me, that just to be a bit repetitive, if you'll bear with me for a minute, most of that comes down to the way that we structure and think about our jobs. We structure and think about our jobs still largely in an industrial framework of jobs being, and really don't look at that whole human being that's been talked about and what might be achieved by that person and by other people working with them. We tend to have these blocks of jobs that people have to try and fit into. So I believe that the just as important as diversity programs is to work hard on restructuring work. You know, if I can give you a quick example of that, in Somerset retirement homes, we have what we call a shortage of nurses who are prepared to work in geriatric care. There actually isn't a shortage. What there's a shortage of is nurses who are available to work in the shift work, which is derived from an industrial form of organisation. We're running care centres like 19th century cotton factories. And there are all these nurses who are fully trained who would like flexible work patterns, who would come and care, and the care can be provided to our people in slots that don't fit the industrial shift work organisation. But changing those work structures is very hard work, and you've got to, you know, we've got to build the way to find the way to make the jobs fit the people rather than the people fit the jobs.
I'm a little bit of a cynic in terms of diversity programs, and I've come, you know, very 360 degree in my thinking over the recent years, because I mean I've sort of been on this, you know, been very interested in this as a topic for the past 8 or 9, and I've seen a huge amount of corporate investment go into organisations that run diversity programs, and yet we still only have one female CEO in the NZX. We still have less than 20% female directors. And when you start looking at Māori and Pacifica or the LGBTI community, you know, that's even worse. So I actually have come to the view it's strongly about driving organisational culture, and it's creating a culture within an organisation where everyone can be successful and bring their best to work, no matter what that is. Because I think you can invest a lot of money in saying to people, we're going to put you on a leadership program, but then they come back into the workplace and the culture rejects them. The organ rejects them and says, no, we don't want change. So quite how you achieve that, I think, you know, I'm just starting to think about that now, and we're just going through a process of resetting our culture. But I think it has to be led by the communities. You have to empower those communities to put policies and to put, you know, practices in place within a culture that's going to help them be successful, and delegate that and say, well, you need to own that as this community and we'll support you, but you need to create the groundswell within the culture. And then I think work practices, work structure, how you structure work, how you structure work in an environment and how we sit at desks, everything is going to have to change to make workplaces a really very different and welcoming place. And the one thing I would say, which I think is the biggest opportunity for all of us, is disability. 20% of people in New Zealand have a registered disability, and they have the highest rate of unemployment in the country. So, you know, that is another community that really is quite ostracised.
And I just love that, Kate, because we've just partnered with an organisation called Be Accessible, and this is an incredible New Zealand-based organisation where we've made a commitment with the government and Microsoft and other enterprise organisations to place 30 people within enterprise businesses that have different accessibility needs. And I encourage all of you to go on their website. And there is so much untapped talent sitting there that we could all be leveraging. But I also encourage you to get them to come in and actually check out how accessible your organisation is. You know, it's not just having the handicapped toilet. It's actually lots of things for lots of people. And you know, mental health's been a huge discussion for everybody as well. Please check out Be Accessible, and Minnie and her team are just absolutely phenomenal.
You know, in my particular space, I guess entrepreneurship and innovation, you know, diversity is important for ideas. So if we only limited ourselves to one, you know, one group of people, that limits the number of ideas that we could be generating. You know, in the particular programs I've set up, we've always really targeted women and Māori, Pacifica. One thing is Māori and Pacifica are very different groups of people, and so, you know, like having specific program for Pacific groups, you know, I always get that specific group for Māori, you know, because they're different energies, and actually and so one of the things, you know, like I feel I've got a beating Polynesian heart, Māori heart, Pacific heart, and we set up a number of programs for the Pacific Business Trust around entrepreneurship, and I was all ready to go and do my thing, and we had appointed our first Samoan person in our team, and they said, oh, actually, hold on, Tui, we really want Sulu to come and talk. I was like, what do you mean? I've got the beating Pacific heart. And it's like, no, we want you there too, but actually it really meant something to that community to have someone of their own standing up and talking to them and being a role model. So that was a lesson for me. I'm just sorry, I've been a bit slow. I've missed a couple of questions. Just back to one other question about the flexible workplaces. you know, it is really important for women and managing your life. Personally, and it is a personal decision, I was so happy to leave the chaos at home. And actually being in the workplace is just like, I could just for a while, I was more productive at work and could just forget about the dirty house. So it's, you know, it's horses for courses, you know, what works for you.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tui. Guys, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on quotas, because it's something this country doesn't want to legislate. But if you look at other countries that do have some quotas, particularly I'm presuming around gender mainly, that's where they're making the biggest impact with diversity.
I might, not directly, but one of the things is that I've definitely benefited from being a Māori woman and being able to apply for scholarships and those sorts of things, and have, you know, with Global Woman was, you know, won a scholarship to do that, and I could never have done that program without having won that scholarship. And on the other hand, I'm like, but you know, don't judge me. I'm not just Māori. You know, I'm all these other things. So I'm in between these two worlds. So I could not have had those opportunities. And also, I am more than just that part of me. If that makes sense.
Yeah, look, I was quite anti-targets, and because I, you know, as a female, felt, you know, I wanted to be on a leadership team because I wanted my males to respect me, and I wanted to be there because of I was good enough, not because they had to put me on because I was a female. But actually, when I look at the only countries in the world that are making meaningful progress, it's the Nordics, and they have quotas. And, you know, we've been at this now for 10 years as a country. And, you know, we've had Males Champions of Change, we've had all these great initiatives, and we've made no progress. And I don't know, maybe it does take something really bold, like quotas, to force, to Rob's point, you know, spillage on boards and execs to get the talent through. Because the talent's there, I completely agree. I think we just look for a stereotypical type of talent. So I think unless we actually meaningfully make progress, that's the fastest and best way to do it, from what you can see from international.
Because you're actually going to be doing this at BNZ this year, aren't you? Yeah, tell us more. Go on.
Well, we haven't announced it yet, so I can't tell you what they are.
Sorry,
off
the record,
that was.
That was
our quiet conversation. But, yeah. So, we are at exec and at senior management. We're going to be giving ourselves a pretty big goal in terms of what we're setting as targets for representation, not just gender, actually ethnicity as well, by 2022. So that will roll out through the organisation. But we have to do it. If you don't do it, it won't happen.
So I guess the fear around quotas is that you're just ticking boxes. You're just getting the person that ticks the right box, right? So how is the panel or the employer looking for the person? How do you manage that, Vanessa?
Yeah, look, I was also dead against it, and similar to Kate, kind of looking at it, actually hasn't changed. And, you know, it's really, really, really tough. But certainly within Microsoft, we're really struggling to encourage women to go for the technical roles, right? Let's face it, that's not... You know, I spend half my time or my personal time going out to schools, in fact, even trying to encourage my own 13-year-old daughter to consider a career in tech. And she wants to be a dancer. Like, that's probably, I want to be a hairdresser at that age. I mean, it is still really, really tricky. And so, you know, what I've done since I've been at Microsoft is our leaders have to actually showcase that they have absolutely interviewed and gone out themselves to tap women on the shoulder. And again, New Zealand, we're such a small country. We've got one degree of separation. We really and truly do know those people that, you know that old saying? Ah, oh, look, if only they had a chance. They're really good. They could do it. Well, I'm going, guys, we're going to give them that opportunity. Because you can teach anyone the stuff. It's actually, you know, going back to those old, remember the old HR bingo cards, you know, hire for, you know, personality and all that sort of good stuff. Kind of that's a bit of the lens that we're doing now. Because quite frankly, geez, if we can't teach people when they start and actually give them the time and energy, if they've got all of the other values, then actually all bad us. And, And recently we've been very, very lucky to have a whole heap of new roles come in for Microsoft locally. And I'm so proud to say that 70% were females. And because we had to go out there and find them, it wasn't simple. They were not, you know, we had to kind of sit down and go, no, this isn't that boring engineering coding role. It's actually, you're going to go out there and talk transformation with businesses. You're going to be in the thick of kind of what they're doing, this excitement around journey. And yeah, it's phenomenal. You know, some of these young women, in fact, I think some of the guys are sitting there going, holy crap. In fact, I heard that the other day. They're going, well, what about us? So I was like, yeah, well, what about you? You know, you got to change as well, and that's for everybody. So, yeah.
Carly, I think the issue here is misunderstood. There are already quotas at board level. There are quotas for white men. And
100%.
And we find white men to fill board positions, whether they're qualified or not. So all that we're going to do, all we need to address is what is the quality of the quotas we're applying. And it's like any other business issue. You do need to measure it. You do need to establish targets. And you do need to explicitly try and work towards it. And so I have absolutely no problem with quotas. The problem is the quota's the wrong one at the moment.
I know you're not a big believer in unconscious bias, Rob, perhaps more conscious bias, but if you look at the pathways that perhaps some of your cohorts have come through, it might have been, you know, private boys-only school, university, banking, finance, legal world, they're not coming up against diversity. So how do you train, how do you bring that unconscious bias or conscious bias to the fore and help them walk in other people's shoes, get that empathy that women are probably better at having naturally? Is there an answer?
Not sure I'll comment on the last bit of it. It's probably out of my expertise. But it is a fact that people come through, men come through on a production line just as women come through on a production line. They just happen to be different ones, and our top management are largely produced on something like the production line that you talked about. So we have to disrupt that in some way, and that's a responsibility of leaders to make sure that we do disrupt that. That does require some interventions such as quotas. It requires some interventions such as re-education of some of these people on the way through. We've got a responsibility to expose people who are in our management groups to a wider range of experiences so that they can, it doesn't naturally come to them, so that they can achieve that. But the best thing to do, I think, is simply to get on with it. As you say, I'm not a great believer in unconscious bias, other than the fact that if you really were not aware of the need for more diversity at the board level, then you are genuinely unconscious. So I do think we let people off on this. These outcomes are conscious. People want the outcomes to be the way they are, and that's how they get maintained and replicated. They don't happen by accident. So the only way we change that is by having quite strong interventions and quite strong leadership, is my view. Otherwise, they'll just go on being replicated.
Is there a sense in New Zealand business that we're all looking after ourselves? Vanessa, I know you've focused quite heavily at Microsoft on collaboration when it comes to this kind of thing.
Yeah, look, there is
sharing ideas and programs.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think for all of us, in terms of, you know, back to that whole hierarchy of, you know, that's the role I'm going to go for, and kind of you've actually taught that from a really young age. I think what systematically is happening now, the new buzzword, you know, agile, have you heard all about that? You know, actually, I think that's going to be a flow on around, rather than where do you want to get to, you know, taking on things that you wouldn't otherwise, so then you are letting go of some of those things. You know, Microsoft's a pretty flat structure. I was quite surprised by that. And so, you know, to get more out of situations, you just have to collaborate. And you know, I don't know if you've all done those wonderful HR get-togethers, and there's this amazing story about a real life, you know, plane crash, and everyone survived, and you've got to go down the checklist to see if you survived. And then you do it as a group. And I did it with my team, actually. And, you know, we're all kind of A-types and all talking all over each other. And the person who didn't say a lot, the quiet woman in the corner, was the only one that survived. And, you know, we really quickly learnt that, you know, actually bringing people in consciously that aren't the ones, the mild-mannered ones, or the people that really and truly sometimes you would just talk over. You know, I certainly as a leader have made a massive shift in my own mind around that. And, you know, everyone goes into organisations and has, you know, wherever they want to get to. I think those are going to change. I really do. I think the, you know, a lot more flat structures, a lot more, you know, agile sprints, teams, getting rid of general managers, you know, they'll then become vice presidents. I mean, you know, that will make a massive shift to that and take on things that you wouldn't otherwise. But, you know, collaborating, getting the best outcome is when you totally include the people you wouldn't normally otherwise.
You've been listening to the podcast of the M to Women Journey to Excellence series with Lexus, the all-new UX. Thanks to Victor, GJ Gardner, Legacy Contracting, and New Zealand Steel. These conversations are from our live forums held in 2018 and 2019. For more details, go to journeytoexcellence.co.nz.